Okay, we're going to call the Senate Education Committee meeting to order. Today is February 2nd. The time is a little bit after 8 o'clock. And in attendance today is Co-Chairman Thomas, Vice Chairman Davis, Senator Stevens, Senator French, and myself, Co-Chairman Meyer. So we have the full committee here today to conduct business. I want to welcome everyone here that's in the audience. We have two bills on today's agenda, SB1, which is Senator Davis's bill that we heard last time we met. And then we're going to get started on SB 43, which is the performance scholarship bill. So we'll go ahead and take up SB 1 at this time. This bill, as you recall, requires the Board of Education Early Development to prepare an annual report, which describes the efforts made to develop, maintain, and continuously improve comprehensive quality public school system and present the report to the legislative education committees. We had public testimony on this last week. Public testimony is closed. We did discuss making an amendment to the bill. So I think what we'll do at this time is go ahead and looks like the amendment has been prepared. We'll go ahead and take up the amendment and then see if there's any other additional questions, comments, or amendments from committee members. So with that, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 1 to Senate Bill 1, Version A, / A.
Okay. Any objections? Well, I tell you what, I'll object just so everybody knows doing. I'll object. For the purposes of discussion. It is just inserting two words in person. Inserting the words in person after present to read the board shall prepare and present in person to the legislative committees. Okay. Any other questions or concerns? All right, I'll remove my objection. If there's no other questions or concerns, then Amendment 1 passes. Okay, any other comments? Questions on the bill itself? Yes,
Senator. Thanks, Senator Meyer. Mr. Chairman, and just one question for the bill sponsor or perhaps for her staff. It just occurred to me, and I was just curious, really, this is sort of the season of legislative overviews we're getting from all the departments, and I was wondering what is different about this report that we're commanding in statute from the overviews we get from the departments typically at the beginning of each legislature.
Mr. Chairman, may I speak to that?
Sure. Senator Davis.
The difference is that they do those department and division reports, but this is the Board of Education reporting to us.
Senator French?
That makes sense. Thank you very much.
And if, Senator Stevens. Thank you. Just to comment on that, I think it's really a great idea. We don't have an opportunity officially to meet with the Board of Education. We do with the administration, with the commissioner and with the department plenty of times, but I think it's a really good idea, as Senator Davis has written this bill, that we have an opportunity to actually have one face-to-face meeting with the board to find out what their thinking is, and they play a very important role, and often we don't really, other than last recently, we've had the president or the chairman has been here to see us, but I think it's just really an excellent idea to have that face-to-face with them.
Okay, very good. Any other comments, questions? Okay, seeing none, Senator Thomas.
Make for a motion to move.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 1, version 27-GS1893, / A, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes.
Okay, seeing, hearing no objection, Senate Bill 1, as amended, is moved from committee. So let's just take a brief at ease so everybody can sign the book, and then we'll. Okay, we are back on record. The next item now before us is SB 43, which is the Alaska Performance Scholarship. We will we spent a lot of time on this, as you may recall, last year, and then several of you were involved, as well as myself, with the task force, and we met over the interim on the Alaska Performance Scholarship as well. And now the administration, the governor, has presented a bill dealing with the Alaska Performance Scholarship. So we will hear a presentation from the administration on their bill. I think what we will want to do is incorporate a lot of the thoughts and ideas that the task force came up with over the interim into this bill that the governor has introduced. And so next week we'll have an overview of what the task force and the recommendations of the task force as well. And we'll take public testimony on this both today and Friday and however long we continue with this bill. So I think to get things started, we'll have Ms. Diane Behrens present, I believe. I don't know who, if you, anybody else is going to join you, if you're doing a solo here. Please join us. And then if you do need someone else to join you, just let us know. So, Diane, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education. You're usually accustomed to seeing Mr. Jeans with the Department of Education. Doing a tag team with me. He is in the House Education Committee this morning, where they're focused on a related matter. Also present in the audience is Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner of Revenue. When we get into the intricacies of the funding questions, I will defer to him immediately. So first of all, Mr. Chair, I would like to thank you for taking up SB 43 so quickly this session. Certainly you recall that in the 2010 year, the legislature passed SB 221, which put into place the programmatic framework for Alaska's first merit-based statewide scholarship program. I would note that this committee in particular spent a great deal of time considering the appropriate structure and focus of an Alaska scholarship. I can either walk through the sectional before you or just briefly describe what the bill does, whatever your pleasure is.
What's the wish of the committee? Senator French.
Mr. Chairman, I am familiar with the bill in general, of course, because I was in the legislature last year, but I was not on this committee. I am on the Postsecondary Education Commission, but it would help me to get a sectional overview.
I think that would be good for all of us for review purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, the bill I was referencing was SB 43. Okay, so I just
right.
was
the
okay.
Bill in front of us.
Yes. Okay.
Very
thank
good.
You.
Yep.
So, in section one of the bill, essentially, this is one of several sections which amends the name of the scholarship program. You may be aware that subsequent to the legislature changing the name to the Merit Scholarship Program, we were notified by the National Scholarship Organization that they had actually trademarked the name Merit Scholarship. So rather than enter into a legal battle over the name, we are proposing to rename it the Alaska Performance Scholarship. So essentially, sections 1 through 6 of the bill, which moves you from page 1 to page 4, does just that. Those are conforming changes. New in Section 7 of the bill is a change to the existing scholarship statutes. It creates an Alaska Performance Scholarship Award Fund consisting of appropriations from the investment fund that is referenced subsequently in the bill. The monies in this fund are specifically for awards of scholarships, and they are non-lapsing. So once an appropriation is made to that fund, the hope is that we would be able to retain that so that in the event there were fluctuations in the number of applicants from year to year, it would have sort of a smoothing effect on appropriations. Section 8 of the bill is another renaming conforming change. And then in Section 9 of the bill is a establishment of an investment fund. This is an approach similar to that that was proposed by the governor last year. You'll recall that the legislature essentially divided the question, elected to focus an extreme amount of time on the structure, deferring decisions on the funding mechanism. In Section 9, it describes powers and duties of the commissioner, allowing the commissioner to report on the condition and investment performance of the fund and declare an amount that would be available for the legislature to appropriate to the award fund. It also includes definitions of commissioner and fund. In Section 10, there is an expansion of the eligibility for the Alaska education tax credit, but specifically against the corporate income tax. So it's only the corporate income tax that would have a credit eligibility. And this is for contributions made to the APS investment fund, performance scholarship fund. In Section 11, and this is something that if you have questions about, I would again defer to Deputy Commissioner Burnett. It talks about a sunset that is scheduled to occur for certain tax credits, and it's, or the amount of the tax credits, a ceiling, and to ensure that donations made under this new provision would still qualify for the tax credit post-sunset. In Section 12, it's a change in the definition section. Because the term program has been excised from the relevant statutes, the definition is no longer necessary. So we're just referring to the performance scholarship, not the performance scholarship program. And then in Section 13, there is transition language, also renaming the performance scholarship and general references to the performance scholarship. In Section 14, are instructions to the reviser of statutes to change the titles in conforming naming changes. And then in Section 15 is transition language to permit the authorized entities to promulgate regulations in the event they're necessary to carry out the changes in the bill. And then in Section 16 through 18, there are effective date. This effective dates of various sections specified. I would note that in Section 17, the effective date for the tax credit is January 1, 2014, whereas all other sections either take effect immediately or 7-1 of 2011. Should I continue? Okay. Any questions?
Well, we do have some questions, Diane. Thank you very much for your presentation. And I think for the purposes of Senator French and the questions you were having, I think Friday's overview will help you as far as kind of letting you know that the scholarship program itself that we passed last year, you know, the framework. And what this is just some amendments that the administration wants done to the framework that we passed last year. Now, we may still adjust that framework, and this would probably be the vehicle to do that based on some of the activities that we had over the interim. And I know one area in particular, your area, has to do with the needs-based component of this scholarship program. And if I recall, the skeleton that we passed last year did not address that.
That's true.
Is that something you would like to see added to this, or
Mr. Chair, I actually believe the programs work very effectively independent of each other, and I do think there is added complexity with blending the existing needs-based program with a brand new program that is focused on a very specific population. As you know, the needs-based program is available to a much broader population, so it would add a great deal of complexity that may not add necessarily value to the end product.
Okay, and if I could just continue, Is that something you would like to see the two tied together, perhaps? In other words, if we put so much towards the merit side, then so much would go to the Alaska Advantage program? Or do you think they should be kept separate and not tied together in any way?
Mr. Chair, I would respond in this way. If you look at the states where there is a blend in the programs and there is a downturn in the availability of state funding, what I've seen occur is that the merit program will be cut in order to keep the needs-based program alive. And I think there are good public policy reasons for doing that, but I think it adds clarity to the discussion and focus of the legislature if they know that they're funding a program that is specifically needs-based and they're also funding separately a program that is merit-based. The policy objectives are so distinct that I think blending them together does have its drawbacks.
Okay.
So we are not promoting that at this point.
And I apologize. I'm getting ahead of the game here a little bit, because actually all you're proposing is basically these three changes. And we do have a lot of questions, and let me just ask one more question. And I also want to recognize Senator Giesel is with us again today, getting to be a regular at our Education Committee. Thank you for joining us. The tax credit that we passed last year had a three-year sunset. Is that something that we should address and maybe extend it? I think what you're allowing here is for businesses, individuals, corporations to make donations to the scholarship program and get a tax credit in return. But if I recall, that program only had a three-year window.
Mr. Chair, I would defer those questions to Commissioner Burnett. I do know that the only tax type that would qualify under this bill for a credit is corporate income tax.
Okay, very good. Well, let's hold that since we have you here.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I could just – I had a couple of more comments if I could proceed the questions with those. I just wanted to most of the members are certainly aware, but just so that the conversation keeps this in consideration, that while the program structure was put in place with SB 221, there was a fiscal note adopted along with the bill. It reflected the startup and continuation funding from the state general fund. While Governor Parnell did propose a fund last year, as you know, similar to this one, you did choose to focus on one issue before getting to the second issue. The governor, of course, has a great respect for the need for collaboration, and in offering this legislation today, he is seeking to advance a discussion on funding structures generally. He clearly has a preference for this particular structure because he strongly believes that the scholarship is a commitment to Alaska students and that establishing a long-term sustainable funding stream is critical to the scholarship delivering the hoped-for transformational results. We are very optimistic given the serious attention and support the scholarship has enjoyed from the legislature and specifically the individuals in this committee. And given the recommendation of the legislature's Higher Education Scholarship Funding Task Force, that similar support is possible for taking steps to ensure some structural mechanism is put in place consistent with the fund characteristics called for by the task force. That is, to create a specific fund that can be capitalized so it is both self-sufficient and self-sustaining. We believe that full capitalization this year is a preferred step and could be taken by those of you who, through your attention and action, really gave life to the scholarship program. I think there is a concern that as time creates a distance between the creation of the program and intended funding opportunities going forward, that the folks with the most ownership in the program will no longer be sort of at the mic, if you will. But we do understand that the legislature may prefer a phased approach. Each of the funding ideas has merits and challenges. I understand you'll be reviewing those on Friday. But there are two specific elements that we do strongly urge be included. One is that the capacity of the funding stream be sufficient to meet the scholarship commitments to recipients once they have received the initial award. That is, ensuring that there are sufficient funds for the last awarded cohort to completely receive their funds in the event of a funding shortfall. And second, that monies once appropriated to the scholarship award fund be made to be non-lapsing. As I mentioned, that is something that would help provide a smoothing effect in funding requests from year to year, potentially. It depends. If it's enormously successful as a program, that effect would be modest. But as we discussed last year, we expect the positive impact of the program to expand and grow throughout its early years. An ability to retain those unexpended funds would be helpful in dealing with that growth, what we hope for will be growth. And, Mr. Chair, those are the only comments I had prepared.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Ms. Behrens. I think Senator French and Senator Stevens. Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for my understanding, it sounds like we're going to get a fuller presentation of the bill on Friday. Is that the committee schedule?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So just a couple quick questions for Ms. Behrens while she's here. What appropriations are in this year's budget? And I guess when I say budget, I mean the governor's budget. What appropriations did the governor put in his budget for this idea?
Through the chair, Senator French, the governor in the commission's budget requested $8.2 million. That number was the number drawn from the SB 221 fiscal note that was adopted last year.
And would that be sufficient to continue funding for the four years of cohorts, or I'm not sure I'm using the right terminology, but I understand what you mean. If you fund a freshman, you want to continue to fund that freshman all the way through their senior year in college.
I do have...
Is that, I guess, what I'm asking, is that 1 year's scholarships, or is that 4 years?
Through the chair, Senator French, it is 1 year. So that's the cost of the entering freshman scholarship recipients.
I see. But just so I understand, the governor's asked that if we do this, that we actually multiply that by four so that we continue to fund for 4 years. Is that the general idea?
Through the chair, Senator French, not specifically. In developing the fiscal note that was adopted with the bill, we did look at a rate of attrition as well. So there is an expectation that there will be some runoff, and so it's not exactly four times that amount.
Maybe eight the first year, seven the second year,
for that,
six
for
the
that
third
group,
year. For
exactly,
that
yes. And we had estimated that by year four, with four full classes of scholar recipients, that the annual cost would be approximately $20 million.
20.
Mm-hmm.
But the governor proposed eight in his budget.
And that is in our operating budget to be expended in a year.
Through the commission.
Correct.
And just one more question on that idea. I heard you say that the governor thinks that a long-term funding stream is critical and that full capitalization is the preferred method. Did he propose a $400 million deposit into a fund to capitalize this scholarship program?
Through the chair, Senator French, that's the number that we have been discussing. Rather than submit a fiscal note for that amount, we have submitted an indeterminate fiscal note, so that the legislature, depending on what the legislature decides to do, whether it's a phased approach or a one-time approach, the fiscal note could be adapted to that.
But the answer to the question is that the governor did not propose a $400 million.
That's correct.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Senator French. Senator Stevens.
It's pretty interesting how we arrived at where we are. The governor introduced a merit scholarship. Both bodies, the House and the Senate, felt it was important to have a needs-based scholarship, and we worked through that, and I think that's pretty important to the legislature that needs-based be in there. I understand what Ms. Behrens is saying, and I'm sure she's right, that it makes it a lot easier if it's not blended, if we keep them separate. But I think the legislature would be quite upset if we found out that the only bill signed was the merit and not the needs base. So the reason we might want to combine them is to make sure that they were both in the same bill. Now that's so that's my only thought on that. And we need to find out what the administration's position is and if they would be support, if the administration would be supportive of our approach to include needs based as well. Thank you.
Comment?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I would note that in the governor's FY12 budget request is a GF appropriation for $1.1 million for the needs-based program, the Alaska Advantage Education Grant. So even though this bill does not propose a blending of the programs or the funding source, I would need to take that concept back to the folks who make these decisions and see if there would be some openness to, and what I'm hearing you say is using the fund for both programs rather than simply for one program.
Well, I think it's something we need to consider. I think you're right that by blending them, it gets some complexity that we may not want to deal with. It would be very hard to do that, and if we can't keep them separate, it might be best. But well, I'm glad to hear there's 1.1 there for needs base. Thank you.
Yeah, last year we did attempt to blend them, and I think the fiscal note got from 20 million to 40 million, so got a little out of hand there. And certainly you've done an excellent job at the Alaska Advantage program, and I think everyone is very comfortable with you administering that program on a needs-based basis. But I think for us to actually get a bill passed through the legislature, we're going to have to tie them together somewhat so that people feel assured that when we give money to the merit side, we're putting some money aside for the Alaska Advantage mm-hmm. needs-based program. So that's just something we'll work on. And I think most are comfortable with keeping them separate now as well. So the change of the name, that was a copyright infringement? Is that the reason? Okay. All right.
Would you expand on that copyright infringement? What we was calling the governor's scholarship. So what?
Through the chair, Senator Davis, you may recall that in the governor's original bill, it was termed the governor's performance scholarship.
Yes.
The legislature changed that name to the Alaska Merit Scholarship,
and that's what
triggered us, put us at risk of infringing on the National Merit Scholarship.
Okay. Senator Tumps.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to expand on Senator French's question, and I certainly understand that we would expect that the first group of people in the first year may drop. The second year, some of them may not show back up. Third year, fourth year, that would be a decrease. But I would anticipate or hope for the success of the program that in the second year we would have more people entering into the program than are leaving the program. Because it's a whole new group of folks, so the concept of multiplying 4 times 8.2 and saying that's the number, and your response that well we expect it to drop off, I actually see it going the other way myself. So maybe.
And if I can just clarify, Co-Chair Thomas, where we would expect to see attrition is in that first class that continues
correct.
Through. So there would be fewer of them as sophomores. We do expect to see growth in that freshman cohort size. We just don't know what to expect. As you know, we benchmark to the Wyoming program as a similar state with similar college-going statistics and used percentages of the graduating class based on that. So we may actually see in the first year that there are fewer students qualifying than we thought, but that by year three we may be exceeding the number of students that we believed would be participating.
And that's why we came up with a number that we just thought 20 million would be a benchmark or a number that we used year to year, and there may be more applications, but that was where the cutoff would be. And then when we factored in the needs base, we had a number between 10 and 20 more added to it, depending on what we wanted to do. Is that your recollection?
Co-Chair Thomas, yes, we did. There were specific, there was a specific formula built into adding the need base, and I would just note that the need base component was solely for the individuals who otherwise qualified for the scholarship, and I think that was one of the other issues of debate, was whether or not adding an additional amount of money for these groups of students as opposed to the students that don't qualify for this but are pursuing education in Alaska, whether or not that met the intent of those that were that had a great concern about need-based aid.
And just a little side note, yesterday Senator Hoffman and I met with a group from all over the state that were down here, and several other legislators had been involved in the program throughout the day, and similar to the response we got in some of the hearings last year about the number of non-traditional students, the entire group that was in the room yesterday with us, which was about 40 people, were all non-traditional. There was not one traditional student that had traveled to Juneau with University of Alaska. I forget what the group was, but Representative Mike Davis was the professor that brought them here along with some of his cohort. So anyhow, just a comment. Thank you.
Very
good. Senator Pratt. Just a quick, and this is more of a sort of a recap of SB 221, but on page 2, line 15 in section 3, it talks about the commission awarding these scholarships. Can you just walk me through whether the commission itself will meet as a body to award these scholarships one at a time, or whether they'll be taking these up en masse, or how you see that going? Because I'm a member of the commission, and I like serving on the commission, but I'm just wondering what sort of workload I'm voting for myself.
Through the chair, Senator French, there will be zero workload for the commission itself, the members of the commission. This is referring to the organization, the commission. And we've actually been working very closely with both the Department of Education and the financial aid community in Alaska to develop it, what we hope to be a very efficient application and disbursement process. Essentially, because the statutes around the Performance Scholarship Program require that students apply for all other eligible, the aid they may be eligible for, we are simply using the FAFSA for the free application for federal student aid as the single application. At the same time, we are also getting a data download from the Department of Education of all Alaska high school graduates, and we will populate a student portal, if you will, that students can go in and they can identify themselves. They must complete the FAFSA in order to qualify for either the Performance Scholarship Program or the Education Grant, but they can go in and see which of the programs they qualify for based on the information that we've gotten through the Department of Education. The school districts actually will be providing the eligibility flag information to us, but that will be in there. They will see which programs they qualify for. And at the same time, it's a portal that the financial aid officers can go into, and there will be a certification process to show that the student meets the other qualifications. They've enrolled at least half time, they're admitted into a program, and then the funds will be electronically dispersed to the institutions on behalf of the student. So it should be a relatively paperless process, and one that we think will be efficient for all parties.
And just one more, if I could. And just for my education, just for example, say you have 1,000 qualifying high school seniors and enough money to pay for 500 scholarships. How will you deal with that sort of imbalance between individuals and appropriations?
Yes, through the chair, Senator French, the statute itself specifies that awards will be made pro rata in the event of a short funding, and so we would essentially make pro rata awards.
So just to make sure I understand, we've sort of are saying through this legislation, every single student who qualifies will get something up to the maximum award.
That's correct.
But if we don't fund it, it could be a very small award.
That's correct. The only instance, we do have a minimum of a $500 award. So if their award dropped below $500, then we would not disperse money on their behalf. And that could only occur if you had a student whose other financial aid drove their unmet cost of education to below $500. So this is a student who is in fairly good condition in terms of financial aid anyway.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator French. Diane, I notice we have two fiscal notes. We have the one that is indeterminate, which I understand, because we really don't know, what the program's going to look like once we're done making our changes here and the Finance Committee and et cetera. But then we also have one that's for $115,000.
I actually don't have a copy of that, sir, and I'm not sure who submitted that.
Looks like Jerry's got it.
Revenue. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I want to ask you some tax questions anyway, Jerry.
Sorry, Jerry.
Yeah. Senator Meyer, the fiscal note for $115,000 could be an indeterminate fiscal note, but it was prepared as if there was a $400 million deposit. And that represents a management cost of the investment fund of approximately 2.8 basis points, or 2.8% of 1% cost on the funds.
Okay, so that could easily change.
It could be an indeterminate, and it would vary a little bit. If the fund's very small, the cost per dollar is going to be a little bit larger. But if the fund gets bigger, it's going to stabilize in that 2.5 to 3 basis point range on the funds.
Okay. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Burnett, could you just, I don't quite understand. On page 5, it says the Christian Revenue will invest the money and in a manner likely to yield at least 5% real rate of return over time. What does that tell you? What does that tell you that you need to know?
Tells me what I need to know. Through the chair to Senator Stevens, that language, but every year when we set the asset allocations for each of the funds under the commissioner's fiduciary responsibility and the funds for the pension funds, we look at capital market assumptions, past history, and an assumed rate of interest. A rate of inflation in the out period. We invest then based on it with an asset allocation which would produce 5% plus inflation. So the last time we had capital market assumptions from Callan, was our financial advisor, they had a 2.75% inflation assumption embedded in their capital market assumption. So that would mean we would have to find a mix of assets which had a mean probability of returning 7.75%. And we would adjust that annually based on capital market assumptions, past performance, and assumed inflation going out into the future.
Well, thank you. So if we don't achieve that, through the chair, what's the punishment and whose salary does it come out of?
That's a good question through the chair to Senator Stevens. So far, we just fire everybody who doesn't get there. No, seriously. Over long periods of time, the investment methodology we use yields those returns. Going back the past 3 years, there was a period of time between summer of 2008 and March of 2009 when equities lost the most they'd lost. It was the third worst in the last 204 years. Okay, so we had a little bad, where people didn't meet their estimate. Subsequently to that, in fiscal year 9 and or fiscal year 10, equities returned a tremendous return, and so a fund invested as this one was probably earned 12%. Last year and so far this fiscal year, maybe 15. or thereabouts with that same investment max. So what you would do then is, you know, with this type of a management fund, which is a payout of 5% of the fund balance. So let's say we had if you'd put $400 million in this fund last year, and this year it earned 15%, you would still do 5% of the balance would be available for payout. The other 10% of earnings would stay in the fund. In a year when you had subpar performance, you would still pay out 5%, and the fund balance would reduce that year. But over time, you would expect with a 5% to be able to achieve a 5% real rate of return, and be able to pay 5% out each year. And the fund should grow over time by an amount approximately equal to inflation. So the fund from 400 million, you know, would go up to, you know, some larger amount in the future, matching over time inflation and have the same purchasing power.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the point of this is to smooth things out so that you can count on so much money every year going into scholarships. That's the reason for it.
Yeah, to the chair, to Senator Stevens. Yes, it gives you a fairly even payout over time, allows the fund to build and creates the other funds that we manage. Some of them have, you know, net income payouts, like the permanent fund, which we don't manage, but it has a net, or the public school fund, which we do manage, has a payout which is based on realized earnings, doesn't consider capital gains. So it grows because you're only paying out what you realize. But the income stream can be very highly variable from that, because some year you may have no, or you may have negative realized earnings, and so you're not paying out anything in those years, unless you're using an averaging back mechanism. So this is a, you know, it's a fairly common practice, and whether it's a 5% real rate of return or 4.5 or, you know, somewhere between 4.5 and 5 is what's typically used for funds like this. The lower the real rate of return required, and the lower the payout in early years, the bigger the payout can be in the future, the more the fund will grow. But you want to achieve something that is even over time, then you would use something near a 5%.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Yeah, I think that 5% is a pretty common number that a lot of your large endowments use that number. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the tax credits.
If I could,
yes.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to bring Joanna Bales up, who's the Deputy Director of our tax division, and she's in the back, and she is our tax credit expert.
Sure. Morning.
Good morning.
You're the expert.
Yeah. For the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the Deputy Director of the Tax Division.
So, okay.
Do you have some questions?
Pretty simple. The tax education tax credit bill we passed last year had a sunset of 3 years. So if this is going to be incorporated into the scholarship program, would we want to remove the sunset, or do you have a opinion on that?
Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, because the new increase in the education tax credit didn't take effect until 1-1 of this year, actually, we won't see what type of contributions and whether or not they'll increase for the education credit until October of 2012. So our ability to, you know, determine if that program is working and that companies are giving more will be difficult to do anytime soon. So I do think it is something that you probably do need to think about, and we would be able to provide you some information next year to see how that credit program's working.
Well, thank you. I think it's an excellent idea in the sense that if our finance folks here can find $400 million to set aside and set up an endowment to get 5% return to pay out $20 million a year. Mm-hmm. Or we pay as we go each year, and then it this program has to compete with K through 12 education and Medicaid and everything else. If we can get some help through via, you know, corporations making contributions, I think that would be beneficial. Do you know of any corporations interested in participating in this program?
We did have several corporations, specifically Native corporations, I believe, that testified last year that were interested in having the increase for the education credit because I think they did want to give more money to the program. So, I mean, I do believe there are corporations that are interested.
If I could, this is Jerry Burnett again. I had a phone call here within the last couple of weeks from a corporation asking about where they could put their money and get this type of a credit. So there definitely is some interest in it, and how many dollars that is, I wouldn't be able to say even if I knew, but it's
And if I can make one more suggestion, as Ms. Behrens pointed out, we did not, when this bill was put together, the credit for the contribution to the scholarship fund is only allowed against the corporate income tax. There are seven other tax types that have an education credit, and historically we have seen most of those contributions, the credit being taken against corporate income tax, but also fisheries, business, and landing tax as well. So it might be something. I mean, we're putting this forth to have this committee and the legislature think about this, but it might be, if we're looking for more investment from companies for the scholarship fund, it might be wise to expand it and allow that credit for all other tax types.
Okay. Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question regards the same thing, the tax credit. These do not take effect until January of 2014. That's, it says section, this is the last page, says section 17 is referencing section 11 of the act, takes effect January 1, 2014, or am I mistaken? So that would be after the sunset date anyhow,
Chair
so
Thomas.
How are they actually tied together?
Yeah, basically what that does is the education credit, the increase that was passed last session, mm-hmm. sunsets January 1 of 14.
Okay.
The way that this is constructed would ensure that even though the higher credit provision will sunset and go back down to the 150,000 max, mm-hmm. that the contributions to the scholarship fund would remain intact.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's all that does.
Okay.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Thomas, if you look at sections 10 and section 11, those work together. Section 10 is the one that adds the scholarship contributions, and then 11 extends that with the separate effective dates.
Good. Okay.
That's a good catch. Okay. Is there any other questions here for our experts? It is a little confusing because without having the other bill before us, it's hard to see how the two blend together. But I think Friday we'll have an overview of the task force, and it will kind of bring us all up to the present. And then what we'll probably do is incorporate some ideas from that into this bill. But one thing I will let you folks know is that I personally support this idea and hoping we can get a scholarship program in place that will be both merit and needs-based, and I think this committee does as well. But I am hearing from some of the smaller school districts that they are not sure that they can meet the requirements of the 4 years math, 4 years science, or the other path, which requires 2 years of foreign language. So hopefully we'll have somebody here who can help us with that. I know last year Commissioner Ledoux had pretty much assured that they would be exempt or waived until they could get up to that level. So that's something we're going to probably want to hear again this year from the new commissioner or somebody, or the acting commissioner. Today's your last day, isn't it, as the acting commissioner? Okay. Okay. And that's going to be not even the next meeting, but probably a meeting next week that we'll ask those questions. Anything else, Senator Thomas?
Just one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since you're here, there's been discussion about the Amarada Hess, the capital income fund, I guess you refer to it. Do you know the balance of that fund and what kind of revenue it spins off on an annual basis?
through the chair to Senator Thomas, I don't have anything in writing with me that has the balance of that fund. However, I believe the fund has roughly $435 million, and it's a portion of the principal of the permanent fund, and that portion of the principal of the permanent fund is set aside as not being allowed to be used for dividends because of legislation that went along with the court action and the Amaretta Hess settlement. The income from that is being paid into the Alaska Capital Income Fund, and it's paid based on the same calculation as the permanent fund, so it's realized earnings, and the dollar amounts on that, I know I provided it for someone yesterday, and I don't recall, but the balance in the capital fund itself is somewhat north of $200 million right now, and there have been appropriations out of that. So I don't know where it stands in an accounting basis based on its appropriations. I have cash balances for accounts that we're investing, and so but that's in our, it's a Jafonzi account, part of the general investment fund in the state. So
thank you.
And if I can just follow up on that, reflecting back on my days in finance, it used to be that fund kicked out about $30 million a year?
To Mr. Chair, it depends on the earnings of the permanent fund and how you calculate those earnings, because using the realized earnings methodology, you're going to get some amount. If actually, since I did provide it to someone, they provided it back. in 2008, it was $32 million. In 2007, it was $42 million. And in 2006, it was $36 million. And then in 2009 and 10, it was zero.
Do we have a copy of that?
Yeah, your staff has it. So,
we'll get everybody a copy of that. I know that was kind of a pot of money that, again, as the capital finance chair, was very attractive, because then that was something we used for capital projects.
Yeah, for a number of years, the income in the Amaretta Hess just went back into the as inflation proofing and additions to the amount in the principal of permanent fund. And Mike Burns, I think, described it correctly in House Finance several years ago as a self-licking ice cream cone. It just got bigger and bigger, and no one used the income for anything. Yeah. So,
well, again, I think that will be, and what we'll find is that was a recommendation of the task force, was to use that fund, the earnings from it, because it was about 30-some million each year. And that's about the magic number we need to fund this program. But it doesn't really matter what we recommend as the Education Committee, because Finance is going to probably have some ideas, too, on how to use that money. So anyway, that'll be a topic for more discussion later. Is there anything else to come before the committee at this time? If not, we'll continue the discussion. Like I said, we'll have an orientation of the task force recommendations on Friday. We'll keep the public hearing on this bill open. And I don't believe anybody actually signed up to testify today, but I think there will be as we continue through this process. So if there's nothing else to come for the committee at this time, we're adjourned.